Well, good morning to you. If you grew up like I did in a place that didn't see much snow, you probably learned winter driving the same way I did. That was a little bit of white-knuckled and clenched jaw, maybe even a little bit of prayer. But as I have grown older, I've come to appreciate some of the advice others have given over time. And my favorite piece of advice actually came during a winter storm just a few years ago when a broadcaster in Charlotte said it this way: if you're not used to driving in snow, pretend you're taking your grandmother to church. She's wearing her best dress. There's a crock pot of hot soup in the back seat. You do nothing suddenly. Now, what makes that advice actually work is that it gives you a reference point, and you stop staring at the road right in front of you in terror, and you start thinking about who you're carrying. Everything slows down at that point. Your hands loosen, and your movements become gentler and a lot more intentional. And I think the same thing is true when we talk about walking on snow or ice. If you stare at your feet, you start to wobble and slip. But if you fix your eyes on something that is steady and oriented and rooted ahead, your body begins to find balance. Your stability actually comes from your orientation. And that's where today's gospel begins. Matthew tells us that just after John the Baptist is arrested, Jesus steps fully into his public ministry. He walks along the shore where Simon and Andrew are casting their nets in the sea, mid-throw, hands still wet, the rhythm of that work that's kept their family fed for generations. And he sees James and John in the boat with Zebedee, their father. They're mending nets, their fingers working all the familiar knots. And Jesus interrupts all their ordinary work with an extraordinary invitation. Just two words: follow me. That's it. Follow me. And the people he's calling live under occupation. They're living with economic pressure. They're living under religious anxiety. All of their future is uncertain, and Jesus offers them a fixed point. He says, I know the ground we're on is unstable. Walk with me anyway. And I think that matters today, maybe especially this week, because the weather has disrupted all of our routines. Plans have shifted. We're worshiping scattered instead of gathered. And moments like this reveal something that's true for us, that when conditions get slippery, we are tempted either to panic or to perform. We either freeze or we try to keep everything running just to prove we're still here. And Jesus offers us a different way. He says, fix your eyes upon me. Walk gently. Follow. We're in the season of Epiphany. And Epiphany is that season of light breaking into darkness. It's a season where God is being revealed to the nations. It began with the Magi following a star into their uncertainty. And it continues with us following Christ through our own darkness, in our own disrupted lives, learning that the light doesn't eliminate the darkness, it's the light that illuminates our pathway through. And so discipleship, our discipleship, begins with paying attention. Matthew tells us that when Jesus says, follow me, those fishermen gave up their nets immediately. That line is so familiar to us, I think we might forget just how disruptive it actually is, because nets for these men are how you eat. Nets are how you pay the bills. Nets are how you know who you are. And nets are heavy. You can't follow Jesus while you're carrying everything. I learned that same truth slowly, not all at once. In my first church after seminary, winter weather was always a source of deep anxiety, especially for our treasurer. The treasurer worried that if we ever closed for a Sunday for gathered service, the church would fall behind financially and would never catch up. And so he always questioned the decision to adapt for weather conditions and for safety. He seemed to operate on this sense that God's generosity had a weekly expiration date. You use it or you lose it. And our fear sometimes has that capacity to shrink our imagination. You know, in my second church, another storm brought up this conversation. And trained by the first church, I went straight to the treasurer to get his advice. I asked the treasurer about canceling worship. And he paused and he says, "Now I want you to think really carefully about this. Because if you don't cancel, you can be sure that Charlotte is going to try to come. Do you want to take responsibility for Charlotte's knees? Do you want to take responsibility for her hip if she falls? Would you take responsibility for those things just because we couldn't exercise a little care?" And that question, in a moment, just reframed everything for me, because suddenly faithfulness was about people. It was about bodies. It was about compassion and mercy. In my third church, that was founded in 1787, before the first George Washington administration, a very proud, long-standing, faithful member told me, "Without fail, this church has been open through hurricanes, Civil War, the Depression, and so many other challenges. These doors would open at 11 and we would worship. You don't want to break that streak, do you?" And I felt the weight of two centuries, and I heard the danger that lay underneath, that when we start worshiping the streak instead of the God who gathers us, we've drifted. And I tell you these stories because they tell us a little bit about where we fix our eyes when things start to feel uncertain. We may feel the pressure of scarcity, or crave safety, or we may even lean on tradition. And none of those things in and of themselves, of course, are evil. Each one has protected something for us that we love dearly. And each one of them can also become a net that becomes too heavy. When Jesus calls his disciples, he asks them to leave their nets behind, because the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God, will move forward by trust. And following Jesus always involves release. A purposeful, honest release. Sometimes it's just one net at a time. But churches drift when they try to keep programs alive just for appearances. And disciples drift when they sometimes confuse their busyness with faithfulness. Jesus interrupts all of that drift with a simple invitation, two words: follow me. And here's what the disciples will see if they could have foreseen the road ahead. Jesus, when he extends an invitation, does not mention Gethsemane when he calls them. And he doesn't give them a preview of Calvary when he invites them to walk. He says simply, follow me. The road ahead is going to include rejection and betrayal, a cross, an empty tomb, and a breakfast by the sea, where he asks Peter three times if love is still possible after failure. The call to follow is an invitation into that mystery of dying and rising with Christ. And it is an invitation we respond to daily, relentlessly, joyfully. This is the gift of saying yes to that call to follow Jesus. You are forgiven, never forgotten. When you follow Jesus, you are carried, but you're not coddled. You're called to walk a very hard road with him, and you're given grace for every step of the way. The disciples didn't know what they were signing up for, but they did know that the one who called them was worth following. And that's still true. We follow because Christ goes first. We follow because the road leads through death to resurrection. We follow because grace is not a courtesy we extend to each other. It's the oxygen we have to breathe in this new life we've been given. We are saved by a God who refuses to let go, who walks ahead of us, who calls us, and who names us beloved and asks everything. Discipleship in the end is glad. It's never driven. It's demanding, yes, but never dull. It is forgiveness at every single turn. And so the good news for us today is this, that Jesus doesn't call his disciples to a sprint. He calls them to walk step by step together with him. And so in this time of Epiphany, we keep returning to those simple practices. Last week, it was come and see. And this week, it's follow me. And following, just like that come and see, does have a particular shape. It has a way it looks in the world. And so this is a practice that I'll invite you into as we continue as a church together in the weeks to come. Even now, as our routines are broken, we'll be returning to them. And your anxiety about what awaits you after the snow melts is probably already starting to build. But I'd like for each and every household and each and every person in this congregation to consider something different. I want you to be able to name one yes and one no. One yes first, a commitment that you can actually sustain. Maybe it's a ministry or a practice or a prayer or a rhythm of care, something concrete, something that you do that's repeatable, something faithful, something you can carry while you're also balancing the crock pot of soup. If we're going to use that first image, it needs to be something gentle and it needs to be something real. One committed yes. And as you follow Jesus, one no. One point of release. Maybe it's a draining obligation, or it's a vague maybe that you've put out there for too long, or a program, or a pattern, or a pressure that no longer serves the love of God or the love of neighbor in your life. It's about walking lighter with Jesus as you follow him. Jesus goes first, and he sets our pace. He chooses the direction, and the grace and the gift of all of that is that when the ground is slippery, Jesus moves carefully alongside us, walks at the speed that mercy would demand, and he asks for us to pay attention and to focus again on him, step by step by step. Fix your eyes upon him and let your hands loosen. Walk lightly. This week, we're worshiping scattered. The roads are very slick. The storm has rearranged all our plans, and we're learning together that worship is a response to the living Christ who still walks among ordinary people and says, this way. Epiphany, in the end, isn't a light that banishes our storms. Epiphany light shows us the pathway through it. The Magi followed a star across very unfamiliar terrain. And the disciples followed Jesus away from their nets on a journey they never could have imagined for themselves. And we follow now, step by step, trusting that the light is enough for the path that we're on to. So wherever you are, however this week has disrupted you, hear the invitation again and hear it as a promise. Follow me and trust that as you do, that light will be enough.